This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 363 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with Town Administrator Jamie Helen and Marketing Communication Specialist Anne Marie Tracy. We had a conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. In this conversation, we talk about the recent phishing incident, the election prep, mail ballots are actually getting out into the mail. Drive-through hours have been set up, and they've already started receiving some of the mail ballots back. An old topic has come back as the state has issued some PFAS regulations and testing standards to be implemented by April 2021. We discussed the series of meetings that are coming up, Senior Center Coffee Hour on October 15th, the next EDC listening session, October 19th, related to that, the Think Franklin First campaign, and a school committee meeting coming up Tuesday, October 13th. Links to the key topics covered here are included in the show notes. The recording runs about 45 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, anywhere on the internet dial, and 102.9 on the local Franklin area dial for another Talk Franklin session with our Town Administrator, Jamie Helen, and Marketing Communications Specialist, Anne-Marie Tracy. Good afternoon, folks. Thank you for joining today.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Steve, how you doing, as always?
I'm glad it's Friday and heading into a fall weekend, maybe.
Yep, and the fall weather is here for sure.
Fall weather.
Very yeah. Brisk morning, freezing. Beautiful, but quite a chilly one.
Yes. Yeah, and as the leaves have been changing, certainly this will be another instigator to get more change in it. But I'm not one who likes kind of like the peak. I enjoy this kind of gradual piece going to it. So you get the full mix of the yellows, the oranges, the reds, and you still have some greens. So
it is. And I also find like you probably all have it at home too. The proverbial debate of when to turn on the heat.
Yes.
You know, I always have this, which is why I'm super bundled up right now. Because it's not quite made the consensus decision in my household to go that way. We're giving the sun a chance here, but we'll have to see what happens later on tonight.
Yeah,
I know everybody at home listening probably goes to the same thing, right?
Yeah,
we had
absolutely.
This conversation last night. Literally, we're gonna turn it on. Now we can do it.
I'm pulling my best Jimmy Carter. I'm throwing on. I threw on a sweater and I got a blanket too. I just have to go that way because you know we just got to hold off a little longer. Apparently tomorrow it's gonna be really gorgeous. I'm sure when people actually hear this interview, it'll be
warmer.
So my family's just saying, no, let's hold on a few more days. Maybe we can get through the weekend. But
By way of disclosure, it was discussed this morning, and the temp was turned up slightly for the first time. So this was the first time the heat actually kicked in for our household.
So you went all in, Steve. Okay.
Well, you know, I got to take care of the lady who's the boss of the house, right? So I got to you got to serve the customers, which is I know you do that all the time.
Customer service, absolutely.
So that'll be a good segue into our thing, and I'll. In terms of the recent phishing piece, and I'll lead in with the particular quotes and make sure that people understand where I'm coming from and where we're going to continue the conversation is. And you, in your letter that I shared, and I quote, attorneys for the town have requested there be no further comment on the investigation until the appropriate time when all of the facts have been gathered and the Franklin Police Department has completed its investigation. So, we'll put that aside, but there are some things you can talk about aside from the investigation. One of the first ones, I'm assuming, and you can verify, we do have some insurance coverage. Is this one of those covered events?
So I can answer some of that, Steve. So I actually did confirm with a reporter earlier this morning, upon the question, the town does have cyber insurance.
Right.
In fact, there's obviously many troubling aspects to all of this, right? But we'll find out when this is all sorted out by the federal, state, and local authorities at some point. We'll finally find out what happened in specifics and what the entire facts are. But we do have cyber insurance. To most folks is an educational point. We belong to an insurance company. It's a little different than your average homeowner's insurance policy or car insurance policy. You know, we don't get a chance to go to Geico, for example.
Right.
For State Farm, there's an interlocal statute and state law that allows municipalities due to the protection of the taxpayer, where there is a unique insurance program called MIA, M-I-I-A. I got to be honest with you, it's like the Massachusetts Interlocal. It's an acronym that I can't even remember the entire acronym for, because everybody in local government just calls the MIA, right?
MIA.
We do have cyber insurance. We actually have a fairly robust insurance policy. We've been very successful the last several years through our rewards and training programs to be able to keep our insurance line item in the budget basically level with almost no cost increases for several years. It's also a testament to our staff. We have very low worker comp numbers, extremely low, as a matter of fact. The town has actually won awards on these kind of things. But we have insurance for fraud, for crime. We have insurance on public officials, school boards. A lot of these are required in law.
Sure.
They're smart anyway. We have insurance on public buildings and public properties. We have insurance, just like everybody else has insurance, on their assets.
Yep.
And a major part of any government now, particularly a town like Franklin, is technology is a significant asset. And what not a time to realize that more than in COVID, where we've had to be remote education and work through the cloud on numerous things in terms of payment plans and permitting and all those things. But we do have a cyber insurance through MIA. I can't comment any further than that. I would say one more thing. The town of Franklin, actually 3 years ago, when obviously throughout the world, cybercrime was on the increase.
Yeah.
I think a lot of insurance companies were trying to figure out what to do. It was trying to identify what's going on and then how do you kind of fix it? How do you insure something? It's not an easy question to answer, and it's even more of a difficult question to answer when you're dealing with cyber criminals, which could be in Russia, Eastern Europe, Africa. It's not just a kid in a basement in Kansas. We're talking about corporate entities here that behave much like a Facebook or a major company, where they make tens of millions and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars off these programs. We're part of a pilot program of a consortium of Massachusetts communities to help guide MIA on this. And one of the reasons why, and Steve, you can surely attest to this too, because you've been a part of many presentations.
Mm-hmm.
Our town technology director, Tim Raposa, one of the reasons why we're chosen is because, A, he oversees all of the school and town technology systems, which is fairly unique in Massachusetts.
Right.
But secondly, he's extremely well regarded in his profession, and is seen as a leader at the municipal level in technology. And because of the efforts that we have done over the last few years in doing the training and outreach and things that we have on our employees, we were part of that pilot program. The insurance that we have is in some ways boilerplate. It's not like at least in cyber right now, and maybe it'll change soon in the future, it's not like your car insurance where you can uplift the collision a little bit, you get mm-hmm. better rate and this
right.
and that thing.
Yeah.
At this point in cyber insurance world, at least for the municipal and personal level, you're kind of stuck with a boilerplate policy at this point. And I would note, just to kind of close off this loop on insurance, we're obviously not commenting any further on whether or not we intend to seek relief through the insurance program. And the reason why is we obviously can't prejudice any of the investigations that are currently going on. And we need to obviously get to the bottom of the facts before we move forward on that. So, I just wanted to mention that. A reporter had called me earlier about it. And so I had given that same statement. So I convey the same thing to you. Then I'm sure we'll be in various articles or other things later on.
Yeah, I know from as you mentioned, prior presentations. Tim has been careful to phrase, and it's one of those things you can't talk about that much, because when you do that kind of internal testing, so you send out a mail, whether it's monthly, quarterly, periodically, to your own employees in order to test their reaction as to, are you going to identify this is truly a spam thing? It becomes an interesting thing. You can't talk that much about security, but you have to be aware of it, and the awareness is absolutely critical. In my work experience, I worked in that organization setting up those tests,
right,
to do that. And the tracking was always interesting. We were very careful in working with our HR organization as to what we could say, what we couldn't say, how to do some, you know, appropriate education without, you know, slapping on the hand, et cetera. Because we did have some frequent flyers. And, you know, those now are at least identified internally. You know, if something happens, it could happen to that person, because every single one that they've clicked on was the wrong one. So even with the best program in doing it, it still comes down to, you know, the individual. And you've said it before, and we've certainly seen the employees are among the best, but they're also human. I mean,
they are.
You know,
they are. I mean, we all are. I mean, it's akin to, you know, your first car accident, you know, when you're 19 or something. You just take a wrong turn. You're learning in life, and bam, and you make a mistake, and that's why you have insurance. You know, that's right. And we saw this with the election. We've seen this a lot. You know, when people make mistakes, you know, we you know, and this isn't just unique to Franklin. You know, it's business, it's corporate America. You try to have a safety net. You know, you try to have a plan B, and you try to put in the protocols and make the changes and the debrief to be able to figure out how you can do things better. You know, it's not to try to in any way, shape, or form dilute the you know, disheartening announcement that I had to send out last night. But, you know, we are human. And I think one of the differences in your story, Steve, is you know, when you're a private company, unless it's dealing with massive, massive, widespread customer base, i.e. Home Depot, Bank of America, Equifax, all of them have been hacked or they've been breached or whatever, which, by the way, is not what happened here. But I just want to be clear, all cybercrime, every major corporation in America, you know, is volatile. This we've seen the stories in the news. When it happens there at a large organization, affects a lot of people, it becomes public knowledge. When it's a smaller company and something happens, you know, it ends up becoming no one knows. But in the public sphere, one of the difficulties in a lot of this is partially one of the downsides to transparency. Is we've gotten to a place where, you know, you look at our annual report, we publish all the salaries of every core employee. Not every town does that. But on the flip side, if you look through public records requests that we receive, most of them are not Franklin. The overwhelming majority of them are not Franklin residents. And in fact, I would venture in the last year, almost none of them are Franklin residents. Okay, because Franklin residents can find or call and get what they need. Most public records requests are corporations looking for data, sell to other corporations. And when you're dealing with procurement, and you're dealing with emails, and you're dealing with all this information, I hate to break the news, the bad guys get all that.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a debate, I think, in public policy that should occur, where we ask ourselves what is now being used against us, possibly, to say, you know, because there is a difference between a private company that has a cybercrime affiliate with it. If they lose money, that's on them, right? That's their own, you know, problem. Here, this is a community-wide 35,000 taxpayer problem. Right. And on the flip side, everything is so public that I think it's just something that cities and towns and state governments and maybe even federal government is going to have to reckon with at some point about what is it that is being now used against us, possibly in these kind of activities. It's as much as this is very difficult and to send out a notice like that, obviously, you know, these are the types of things that start clicking through people's minds like myself right away, and certainly other town managers and superintendents, and I'm sure the state government leaders as well talk about this stuff very frequently.
Yeah, it certainly keeps a number of security and information protection folks, which was one of my roles, awake at night, because as much as you do, the nefarious folks are out there trying to get ahead of you. So as much as you try to be ahead, they're going to be a step ahead of you. I haven't seen a perfect arena. And for some companies, whether they're small or certainly in the financial services industry where I was, reputation is a rather critical one there, akin to the trust in the factors here, because, yeah, it's our money. It's our taxpayer dollars. And at some point in time, we're going to need that somewhere. Exactly. It also gives an opportunity to look at, okay, the controls that are in place. Right. So they may have been good, and certainly you've had good audit reports, but something still happened. So you've got to revise that.
Well, I mean, I would point a couple of things. I mean, all of our audits are on the town website, www.franklinma.gov. There's a whole section that I built for audit. There's also in that section a risk assessment. And, you know, if you look through those documents, you'll see that the town of Franklin's had a fairly great bill of health for many, many years. And so we're proud of that, you know. And I think that at the end of the day, as disturbing and as difficult as these things are, I certainly hope that the general public and the taxpayers don't evaluate us and judge us on our worst day. You know, that they look at the totality of the efforts that we do and realize that the sum of what we do as a government and as an organization, you know, far exceeds the, you know, the mistakes and some of the other challenges that we've had. I know that's hard to internalize. Maybe it's hard to say. But in true, I think, in true truth, if you will, I think overall our organization is quite elite. We have some of the best staff that anybody can get. You know, in the public sphere, these become a little bit more challenging. They, you know, this is all public stuff. You know, and, you know, I think that when we turn to the elections in a minute, you'll see is a great example of a problem we had 4 or 5 weeks ago. We took the right steps to mitigate that, and we're making some significant improvements. So, you know, as an example of what we hope to come out of this this crisis that we announced last night, we hope and we expect and we know we're going to deliver on making things better. And, you know, what we want to try to do is make sure that we don't make the same mistake twice, and that we evaluate and debrief and make sure that we do the right things necessary moving forward to protect everybody in this situation. So I know we're going to talk about the elections in a minute, but yeah, before we go there, obviously, I don't know if you have anything else you want to add about the first topic.
Yeah, no, I think it's a natural segue because the two, clearly, to your point, the election piece happened, and it's the similar process. You know, something happens, you evaluate it, you adjust, and you improve, and we're already starting to see that, which we'll get into. And clearly, because we can't talk completely at length, because the investigation, I mean, we're still in the middle of this. So at some, beginning. It's going to take some
beginning.
Time. Beginning, excuse me. I got to be careful in my words.
Really?
We're in the beginning of this.
Yeah.
We got to let it play out. And we all know the social world, the things, people want things instantaneously, and it doesn't always happen that way. So we'll let it play out, and we'll come back, and we'll be able to say, oh, yeah, there were happy things. But at least the happy things, ballots are already coming back, right? So
ballots are already coming back. I mean, you know, I know 5 weeks ago we were on the show, or whatever, 4 or 6 weeks ago, and, you know, we were talking about another, you know, stake in town. And you know, as I said on your show a few weeks ago, you know, we sat down with all the department heads that have a role in elections. I even met one-on-one and had a series of notes with Ms. Burr, you know, the former town clerk, talking about what did we do right, what did we do wrong, and how do we make adjustments moving forward. This week on Tuesday, October 6th, the ballots were delivered. Ballot kits, which for folks at home mean the ballots, the envelope you have to put into the envelope, and all of the other stuff that you need to get in your ballot safely for the election and legally. We've got all those kits. That was 26,000 kits, roughly. And we had a request for about 12,000 mail-in ballots this year, approximately. You know, I mean, it's obviously been up and down and grown.
It's a moving target, and I know
fluid when... moving target.
Yeah.
But right now, we've got approximately 12,000 of those. And by today, in a mere 4 days, all 12,000 of those kits will have been mailed out to everybody who requested a mail-in ballot.
It's good news.
You know, it's great news. And furthermore, you know, one of the other things that came out of the debrief was, I think, access. And obviously, you know, part of the elephant in the room is the national media focusing on the U.S. Postal Service and this anxiety that already exists in America for good reasons because of the COVID crisis and the job and the economy. You have a lot of people who, rightfully so, may be a little nervous about various things. So to ease those concerns, you know, because I try to do the best I can to put myself in the shoes of average citizens in town, if they're trying to stay socially distant and stay safe, and they really want the comfort, which is what this is really about, is about comfort, to know that their ballot is getting in the hands of the right people, we have expanded our drive-through window access at Town Hall, Municipal Building, 355 East Central Street. Many people in town know about it, but many people in town surprisingly don't know about it. We've expanded hours, beginning today, as a matter of fact.
Yep, Friday, October 9th.
Through Columbus Day weekend, including Sundays and holidays, we are having staff work from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. to take ballots live in person. And we are also from 10 to 2 on weekends and holidays, staff will be present at the drive-through window to take those ballots in. And any citizen out there can just hand their ballot through the drive-through box, like at any pharmacy, and put it in there. They can ask questions if they want to of the individual that's there. And we're doing that all the way through Election Day. Mm-hmm. And if people come in at midnight, they can put it in the white drop box. It's clearly denoted. We changed
the
signage on it. We're doing everything we can to make sure that everybody has access to deliver their ballot safely and securely and comfortably with whatever their comfort level is with COVID. We also have early voting, obviously, for 2 weeks before, starting October 17th through October 30th. All of this will be at the high school gym as usual. And of course, there's a good old fashioned election day. People can come in person on November 3rd. So there's plenty of opportunity for people to choose how they want to vote. I think that at the end of the day, the mail-in voting thing, which has obviously generated some controversy, I absolutely believe in it. I absolutely believe it's safe. I believe it's secure. Fraud is not really a part of this equation when it comes to ballots. And I think the germane point is this is really about comfort and choice for 26,000 people who are registered to vote, and how do they want to vote? Some people don't feel comfortable with mail-in balloting. That's okay. You don't have to do it. You can go in person. Some people feel completely uncomfortable going in person. So some people work a late shift, or they work during the day and they can't get to the box until the weekend, and they're going to drop it in the drop box. That's okay. We're checking the white box, the drop box, on an hourly basis, up to a certain point each night, even on weekends. So, you know, we're trying to cover every possible way we can. And, you know, for the citizens that did request a mail-in ballot, please check your mailbox. They should be on their way over the course of this weekend and into early next week. And if you can believe it, Steve, we've already had people come back and deliver their mail-in ballot through the drive-thru window at Town Hall.
Good. Good. Yeah, the process is working. So two additions to that. Clearly go to the town clerk page for additional details on the schedule, et cetera, and or Franklin Matters, because we've shared that. It'll bring you right back to the town page. And then I know I participated with you and Nancy, our temporary town clerk, in the audio that Frank Falvey, my colleague at Radio had conducted a week ago. So people can also listen to you and Nancy talk and answer Frank's questions as well. That was shared out through the Franklin Matters podcast because he doesn't have his own podcast. He just goes to the radio. So we shared it out because it's good stuff, good questions, and people need to know, especially at this time. So I think those are the two big keys there. Another topic, kind of a reappearance of a topic we've had from some time to time, is the PFAS. And the state has now come out with some testing requirements for that.
So a quick update. PFAS testing, it's what I think the slang term is, a forever chemical. There's been a lot of news in the past about this. Just going back a couple of years, there was a rumor that there was some PFAS in some water over off of Beaver Street. As we announced probably about a year ago now, Steve, the water department had actually already done testing in anticipation of the water treatment plant with DEP, and did show that the PFAS level in those waterways was below what, at the time, what was guidelines, or best management practices, if you will. At the time, there was no regulation, but the testing that we were required to do on PFAS in those areas before the wells are being built did show that our PFAS levels over there were below what those guidelines were. I will say that there are mandatory testing that will occur in every municipality across the state by April of 2021. In true Franklin fashion, we're not waiting. We literally asked DEP to just go out and test now. There was an offer where DEP said you could do it, now this fall, or you could wait till the spring. It would be really easy for us to go punt, but we don't do that in Franklin.
Nope.
And so we told DEP to just go forward with it. I want to note one thing that the rumors out there that may come up from certain things on PFAS. PFAS is a non-stick element and chemical that's used. It's used in a lot of food products.
Fire retardant materials, from what I understand, too.
Fire retardant materials is what Teflon pans are made out of.
Yes.
You can also find PFAS in microwave popcorn. The bags, the Orville Redenbacher prepared bags, not the, the single kernel. It's in a lot of things like lipstick, cosmetics. It's a chemical that I think probably falls into the level of many others that we've seen over time, where the research will continue to evolve on what its impacts are to people and what it's not. Right now, I believe the most sensitive information that DEP and the state has tried to convey to people is the effects, particularly on women who may be pregnant. I believe is one of the categories and demographics that the state is fairly concerned about. So it is something that people should be aware of. The testing will not be done in Franklin, I think, till the end of the year, the calendar year, and then we'll see where we stand. The other good news is I know Representative Roy and the legislators have talked about this before. They did do a budgetary program for this, for remediation, if there is PFAS found to be above and beyond. But I also caution people to not pay attention to Facebook, because there are rumors out there of where PFAS comes from. And I would note something that was in a story last year, where it would be assumed that the PFAS was coming from the turf field on Beaver Street. That is not a confirmation, and that is not factual 100%. I would note for the residents at home, one, mainly, there's PFAS, PFAS comes from one of the main sources is from rubber. And I'll remind people that Beaver Pond and the river over there and the waterways and the swamps, 495 goes right through it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of the river, of the brook, is the old property that is at the end of Fisher Street, which is a super fun site being managed by the Environmental Protection Agency at the federal level, where there used to be a rubber manufacturing plant on that property for 45 years or so, for decades. It's been dormant, of course, for many, many years. But
right.
Note that there's been tons and tons of soil and other debris pulled out of 300 Fisher Street as part of the mitigation on the Superfund site. So just ask people to reserve judgment quickly. And here's another process for you, Steve. processes. You know, this is another process that's going to take some time to unfold. And the immediate reaction is to panic about the field. But that is not a confirmed source with legitimate testing that was done that was certified by DEP. We have met with DEP over this numerous times. And they have publicly also stated in response to those complaints, acknowledging what I'm telling people now. And so over in that area, again, we did test last fall in anticipation of the water treatment plant. And in the area that I'm talking about, the PFAS levels that were found were below what the guidance was and what the standards of the federal government were at that time. And so hopefully by the end of the year or early part of 2021, we'll have a fresh set of data and we'll be able to, if there is a problem, we'll be able to work through the process and be able to try to make sure we clean up if there's anything over there. And certainly, just to also add on, it may not be the town's responsibility. It depends on what DEP finds. And sure. They may not find the actual source until more testing is done after that they find out that there's a level that won't meet state standards. So. It's a very complicated topic. It's one that we absolutely are going to pay close attention to because it affects public health.
Yep.
And it is one that we're going to take very seriously, and we're going to work very collaboratively with the state on with this. We're looking forward to find out where we stand.
Yeah, two points to that I would add. One, this is state regulation. The feds, while they've got guidelines, don't have a regulation on PFAS yet. So at least the state, to our credit, we're at least going to benefit from that in terms of our own health and safety. The other piece is, coincidentally, Consumer Reports, for those who do subscribe to that, as I do, the cover article for this October issue is How Safe Is Your Drinking Water? And primarily because PFAS is in there. They've done a series of testing, and PFAS is also in bottled water. and they're highlighting it because that should be regulated at the federal level. And as we mentioned, there is no federal regulation at that yet. So it is a complicated situation, and this has been a return to our conversation. And I'm sure we'll have this, maybe not regularly, but we'll have it on at least a periodic basis as we go forward.
And I'm hoping that there's a balance in all this. I mean, I think that Massachusetts and certainly the Franklin government is very conscientious of being of protecting our water supply.
Mm-hmm.
We're fairly conscientious of our effects on climate change. We're fairly conscientious on trying to be a good steward of the environment. There is a balance, though, and I think that there will probably be a little bit of a fight in this if it comes up, but. You know, there could be a big financial element to this. And I think what the stormwater issue is similar, where we're trying to identify how do we want our lakes and streams to be in terms of water quality, right? And
right. And
being that Franklin is a groundwater community for drinking water use, we can't be in this overly punitive place, I feel, where we're just, cramming down regulations on taxpayers to pay bigger bills. Trying to make sure we take a methodical, frugal approach to how we can try to actually mitigate the problem without burdening people too heavily in their wallets. It's a huge concern I have over all of these environmental regulations, and it feels at times like there's you're either on one side or the other. I don't necessarily like that approach. You know, we have to try to remain a commitment to the environmental preservation and the preservation of drinking water supplies, et cetera. But, we need to make sure we do our due diligence on behalf of the taxpayers. With all due respect to EPA and DEP, they're focused on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes right. It takes people like me to push back on them quite a bit, like suing the EPA over the stormwater issue, like we did for 5 years.
Right.
And David actually kind of took a chunk out of Goliath's leg on that one. And we're proud of that. But we're going to do the same thing with PFAS in lieu of lack of federal jurisdiction on this. You know, we're going to do the best we can on taxpayers to mitigate any financial damage that this may be down the road.
Yeah, because I think there's more than two sides to a story. It's a multi-part conversation, which gives us a segue into people can participate in the conversations, particularly with the Senior Coffee Hour, with our legislators and you and other town councilors next Thursday. And then following with the next listening session of the EDC on Monday the 19th.
Yep, go ahead, Emery.
So the Senior Coffee Hour is obviously happens every month, and the links for that are available on our website. So anyone can, sign on, find it on the calendar on the homepage of franklinma.gov, and find, how to connect. I haven't sat in on any of those because I'm not a senior yet, but you can certainly get some great information from local officials. So I hope people are taking advantage of that. And then our second listening session for the EDC is coming up on, as Steve said, the 19th. This focus is on restaurants, hotels, and hospitality, which is a really, I'm really looking forward to hearing from the businesses in this particular sector, just because the complications that restaurants in particular have been dealing with in the wake of the pandemic, and then having to, so many of them right now relying on their outdoor options, with the weather in New England getting, chillier every day. I think hearing from them and really learning what they need and what they're hoping to do as the winter approaches, I think it could hopefully spark some really interesting conversation, as well as, hotels are clearly have been affected, anyone in the hospitality industry. So I'm really hoping that we'll get a great crowd, that we can hear what businesses are dealing with and what they could suggest, what they are hoping to, maybe a road they're hoping to go down, what they're looking for. So those listening sessions, the link for the Zoom is going to be going out probably very soon. It's listed on the calendar, but when the agenda goes out, the links to attend will be there.
Sounds good. We look forward to those. And I think the other meeting coming up next week, school committee has their next of their series, the first of the October series, on Tuesday, October 13th.
Yep. That one's coming up as well. Yep. And if anyone hasn't seen yet, we are, speaking of business and, restaurants and some of the industries that have been, impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. We're trying to spark some keep it local thoughts here. Our local businesses are entering what is bound to be a pretty difficult time, difficult winter, or maybe a make or break holiday season. And we're really trying to get our residents and the community to take that moment to think about how they can support our local businesses first, before they can go elsewhere, before they go on Amazon, before they, maybe give their money somewhere else. And just the impact that you can make when you spend your money locally and really try to get some of our businesses, some of my favorite places to shop, to get through this difficult time. So we've launched a social media campaign. We're trying to get it out there and hoping people will kind of latch on to the idea and really, do their very best to think Franklin first. And there's so much to do here. There's so many great businesses here, services here, companies here, things to do here, entertainment here. We really don't have to go far for what we need or what we're looking for. So
sometimes it takes like a little bit of a reminder. It may take people a few more minutes to, explore something they may not have known before. And so I think that's the idea behind a lot of this, is before you go plunk down and hit the purchase button online, just think Franklin first, just quickly, maybe take a quick Google search to see if something else in town, if there's another store, deep within the nooks and crannies of the community, if maybe there's an option there to put that money in their pocket.
And as a fun local thing for this weekend, I'm going to do one little plug here. A fun local thing people could buy this weekend is the Friends of the Franklin Historical Museum are actually selling their hand-painted ornaments.
Yep.
So if people haven't seen those online, there's two really beautiful hand-painted designs. One is of the Ray Memorial Library. The other is the Clark Square Water Trough. They're selling them at the Historical Museum, drive-through style. You don't have to get out of your car. They're $18 a piece. They come in a pretty velvet box. So there's very limited quantities because they're painted. So if anyone wants to go pick one of those up this weekend, they're selling them the 10th, 11th, and 12th from 11 to 2 at the Historical Museum right on West Central Street.
And having gotten previous of their other editions, the box is nice. It's definitely a good Christmas gift or holiday gift. The box is good to give that way. Yes.
No, for sure. I'm not ready to talk about Christmas yet. But
yeah, it's too early. We're not even Halloween yet. I know.
At the same time, you know, you can check something off your list right here.
Indeed. Indeed. And that also gives me an opportunity to the extent of the reopening and gradual events happening, et cetera. We've reinstituted the calendar. So there's a bottle can drive, the ornament sale, farmer's market, obviously, today. There was supposed to be, and it may come back this weekend now that the winds have gone, but there was a story walk on the Snet Trail, and they had taken it off because of the high winds. I expect since the winds have dissipated, it'll probably come back for the weekend, so we'll update the calendar for that.
I saw the story walk at Delcart when I took my dog there to walk. It's so cute.
It is.
I'm telling my kids are older now, but I would have loved to have that when they were younger. It's just such a great fun thing to do with kids.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, as we kind of close out and wrap off to head off to do our other good stuff this weekend, anything else you want to add to this?
Well, I'm going to add one more thing. Counselor Jones, you know, beat me at a punch the other night. I had a chance to jump out in front of him, but he got it. I'd be remiss as closing out. I know we had during the real tough times, we had the little cultural moment, but I have to send a rest in peace out to Eddie Van Halen. A lot of musicians come and go. Hard rock is certainly probably our generation, probably is the last one, Steve and Amory. There's some out there today, but let's be real. I mean, the aura of the guitar god, if you will, or rock and roll god has been diluted a little bit and gone on. The tastes have changed. But for those of us that know and lived through it, this guy was one of the Mozarts or Bachs of his era and genre. You truly feel a disturbance in the force when someone like him hasn't written a great song in years. Obviously he's a well-known recluse. Usually some of these guys end up kind of being like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any of us can make any mistake. He is certainly a giant in terms of rock history or music history. And, I actually will admit I've been running through from start to finish the catalog this week. Many songs are probably on our playlists of Van Halen. Amory and I were having laughs in the office with some of the younger staff. They don't know who Van Halen is, but they know Right On, they know Jump. They know Panama from sporting mm-hmm. events, and Celtics games, and Patriots games, and stuff. Mm-hmm. What a wizard, what a loss. No matter what way you cut it, how you feel about how great they've been in the last 25 years, which is a fairly non-existent. I was very lucky to see him, on a few occasions. One moment, I remember at the Centrum on Halloween, and it was 1991 or two. Got lucky and I think my dad got a bunch of tickets for my friends and was like right on Eddie Van Halen's side. And I was a big Sammy Hagar fan. I love David Lee Roth too. I mean, I love both of them, but, he was a magical, magical presence. You just could not take your eyes off the guy. You just knew, he was above everybody else. So, obviously he had a lot of health problems in recent years, so we certainly rest in peace, Eddie, and obviously his legacy will live on.
Indeed. Yeah, and for the older folks, October 9th also is John Lennon. And it's actually been, I think, according to what I've been hearing, 40 years, and he only lived 40. So he's at that crossing point. It's 40 years since he's passed, and he was only 40 at the time he died, and we lost him early. So
way too early.
Yeah. It's not quite the same guitarist, right, but he certainly was a lyricist.
Well, a songwriter.
Yeah, right? Songwriter, and, for sure.
And interesting about Van Halen is all of the members got songwriting credits for all of their songs all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's fairly rare, but I don't think anybody makes any mistake that, we know who was writing the riffs. I think it was pretty clear who was writing the riffs, because there ain't nobody else that can barely play a lot of those riffs, let alone write them. And,
sure.
It's a great call on John Lennon, too. I mean, it's the Beatles. I mean,
absolutely. Indeed. So with those earworms listening to either Eddie or John over the weekend.
What a perfect weekend to dig into Van Halen and the Beatles.
Sure.
Here's your playlist for the weekend.
Absolutely.
Pretty straightforward, right?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time. And in another 2 weeks, we'll talk Franklin again.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Enjoy the long weekend.
Have a great weekend.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.